This is Wade Rathke, and you're listening to Wade's World, a Voice of the People program. Welcome to the east side of town so that we can talk about how the other half lives and what life is like here living in Wade's World, whether that's the east side of Little Rock, Greenville, or New Orleans, or on Acorn Radio in Nairobi, Bengaluru, Bristol, or Bombay, points north and south, east and west, where we are either rebroadcast or live streamed at kabf.org and acornradio.org. A podcast will be available to show on these websites and at www.affiliatedmediamovement.org. You know the story on Wade's World. We talk to the most interesting people in the world, and today we're in Dublin, Ireland, and we're talking to Seamus Farrell, who is an activist in housing and other areas with the Dublin Central Housing Group. Seamus, welcome to Wade's World.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, so first, tell us what's the situation around housing in Dublin. One of the first things you told me when I landed was that Dublin is now pushing past London, and right on the heels of New York and other places, is the most expensive rental situation in the world.
Yeah,
is that true?
Yeah, it's true. Rents have doubled in 3 years. It's about 1,400 for a one-bedroom apartment. 1,400 euro.
1,400 euro.
Yeah.
So for those of you listening,
1,900 US
dollars, US. Yeah, 1,900. That's, you know, live with your mama rent.
Yep.
So how are people managing that?
I think there's a few different dynamics that are happening. Some people are just being forced out of the city, trying to find cheaper places to live. Other people are forced back home or into very overcrowded situations. And then a lot of people have been forced into homelessness, either on the street or emergency accommodation, which is semi-state run and sometimes run by charities and is temporary, could be a hotel room or...
And you're lucky if you can get it, from what
yep.
I understand. In
yep.
other places in Europe, I mean, there's a waiting list. Some people have to wait, where I was just in Bulgaria, a year to get into the emergency housing.
God, yeah.
What kind of emergency is that? But yeah, so is that what sprung your organization into life? Or this has been, I gather, a long-standing... Tenants have been organizing for a while and effectively in Ireland.
They have been. The homeless crisis itself has escalated in the last 2 years, but we've been active for four around, I suppose, rents, cost of living in general, the lack of social and public housing, poor conditions in the city as well. I'm sure that's a common thing that happens. A lot of the housing stock's old and mold and damp. So we've been here for a while, we're organizing around tenants' issues. Yeah.
And are we making progress?
No.
Oh no.
Winning battles.
Wrong question. Wrong
winning,
question on Wade's World.
Winning battles, losing wars, I guess, is probably the... We've had some success in terms of anti-eviction work. We'd have very local anti-evictions, stopping people getting kicked out of their homes. We've had success in terms of direct actions, occupations of vacant properties, in terms of more advocacy, making sure people are getting improvements done to their house, or, you know, conditions dealt with by landlords. But a lot of them have been very small scale, or individual, or small block, rather than the larger structural challenges are happening here as well as across Ireland.
Walking over to the meeting this evening, we passed some buildings that had been the site of a large occupation for quite a while that
yeah.
gathered quite a lot of support, I gather. What was the story there?
Yeah, so there have been a number of major occupations in Dublin. One of the first ones 2 years ago at Christmas was the taking over a vacant state-owned building. A thing called NAMA was set up, the National Asset Management Agency, to take bad loans from banks, and they had a number of properties all around the city. So that was seized about 2 years ago. People were moved into it over a month. It ended over court injunction, and this time around last summer, buildings were taken over which had tenants evicted in May, and the landlord was a slum landlord, overcrowding the places with up to 40 people in 3 and 4 bedroom buildings.
Yeah, wow.
7 to a room. Mattresses and like bunk beds put into the places.
Well, how did the tenants movement hear about this?
They contacted our group. We've been working the area locally. We'd be door knocking. We would have a support group every Friday so people can drop in. We would have stuff on social media. We'd have leaflets put out. So tenants were aware that we existed, had contacted us about conditions. Initially, we had talked to one or two tenants about conditions, and then suddenly the landlord was threatening to evict all of them within 2 days, at which point there were 7 buildings in a row which were being threatened with eviction, staggered. So we end up having a week of physical anti-eviction resistance, where people hired to remove them.
Now, how much support did you get in that? This must not have been easy for some.
Yeah, no, large. Probably got 100 people mobilised, physically blocking the buildings from being evicted. But eventually, the landlord offered them cash to leave. The offers went from €200 to €400, then to €600 each day, and they picked people individually off until they had all left the buildings, because that was enough to get a deposit somewhere else and kind of move on in a quite precarious housing situation. But because this slum landlord, we felt he'd gotten away with it in a lot of ways. We wanted to tackle him. We knew we'd had large community support. We also wanted to spark, I suppose, more radical action and demand the council start CPOing, which is compulsory purchasing vacant property to be turned into public housing. So we end up occupying those buildings in July 2018. With the demand of the council to purchase them after they've been evicted. So,
and then what happened? Did the council respond?
The council, local elected councillors put in motions demanding the council, so in terms of a tangible legislative process, but the management blocked it. Council management said, no, we don't have the budget for it, which is untrue. There's plenty of budget to subsidise landlords in the city, but there wasn't a budget as there is in every city. So they didn't move on that, but we held it. Then there was a court order to vacate, at which point we moved to a new building right around the corner, a different landlord. Again, we felt it was another good target. It was an insurance company. They had bought a number of properties in the area. They were leaving them vacant, waiting for the value of the property to rise, and then they would flip it effectively. So we were like, this is ridiculous in the middle of a housing crisis, so we'll take that. That building was forcibly evicted by private security and the police, which led to 6 arrests and a big mobilisation on the street, at which point the crowd marched down to the police station and demanded the release of everyone, which happened. And then the next day a demonstration was called, which 1,000 people turned up to. And 2 weeks later...
1,000 people? That's a good level of support.
Yeah, good. And that marched from there to a new building, which was then taken and opened. So it marched through the area where everyone was affected, and more people were coming out of the apartments out onto the street joining the protest.
So you are getting a lot of tenant involvement, just as you say, we're winning battles, not the war, because it's been moving. So how does the support group, a weekly meeting, you say?
Yeah, so the idea is peer-to-peer support. The tenants are able to firstly take each other out of the isolation of housing problems. You can feel very alone when a landlord is threatening to evict you and you've no one to talk to and you don't know anyone else.
So do tenants run those support group meetings?
They run the support group meetings, they talk to each other, and normally at least one person from our group is there to talk through options, be it direct action against landlords to knock their neighbours to get more support, so it can be a collective action to go public to highlight the situation depending on what they want. So there's a mix of type situation. Some people come in wanting a bit of paperwork done, other people want more radical action to be taken. We're constantly encouraging tenants to kind of collectively act together, that's a use. It's also a consistency for us. It can be very useful to have something once a week that we run consistently and that we know people know is always there and tenants know is always there.
I noticed right before we started talking there was a group going out to do some door knocking. So are they building information or knowledge about the support group, or what are they door knocking for?
Find out what the issues are is the first thing. Like, we can pretend that we know that what the issues are, but we have to talk to people. We shouldn't be guessing what we think the problems are if we're going to base campaigns or action out of it. So the first idea is to find out what's happening, what are the pressing issues that people are finding around housing, but also general community issues that they want tackled. The second thing is to give them the information that there is a support group and there are community events that we run as well. And the third thing is to try to encourage tenants to come together to form their own tenants groups, so more localised. They're the main things we go out with.
And we're talking to Seamus Farrell, who's with the Dublin Central Housing Group, but there are groups that are forming all around Ireland. There's an Irish housing network. We met some people with them. And what's happening? This is starting to spread throughout the country, or this has always been part of the social action in Ireland, or what's going on here? Are you all coordinating with other cities?
Well, there have been waves of it. Originally, the Irish House Network was set up in 2014, And at that point, there were about seven or eight groups. Six were in Dublin, two were outside. There was a group in Galway, there was a group in Kildare, which is a small rural area outside of Dublin in the Midlands. It grew for a period and then retracted a bit. And now we've kind of had, in a lot of ways, a second version of the Irish Housing Network with groups in three of the other four major cities, Limerick and Galway, contacts in Belfast as well, and then groups in smaller towns around Dublin, Maynooth and Louth and Kildare as well, and Wexford. So yeah, there are groups, there's interesting dynamics between a big urban area like Dublin and smaller towns and what issues they're facing. But part of the reason the network is spreading is as much the conditions are now across the whole country. Rents have gone up everywhere, and in fact most cities in the Republic of Ireland are now at least 80% the price of Dublin. So even small towns have seen an absolute rocket in rent prices, as well as a sharp rise in homelessness. So the ground is there in terms of
now,
the problems.
We met a woman, we spent some time in both Limerick and Galway over the last couple of days meeting with organizing committees of tenants, and one of the spark plugs in Limerick had tried to make it in Dublin, couldn't afford the rent, and ended up in Limerick.
Yep.
And that is that common, that people are being pushed out? Is displacement a big issue as well?
Yeah, there's at least two exoduses. The traditional working class in the inner city are being forced out to the edge of the city predominantly. There would have been large social housing around the Docklands, built originally very close to the main commercial parts of the city, and they're attempting to remove them. At the moment, some of those complexes still exist, but families, children, grandchildren,
social
are
housing
about.
Is what we would call public housing,
yeah,
in the US. Now, is there still construction of
No,
of
social it's completely
housing?
Stopped. 3 years ago, it was cut to zero, and the efforts are now to subsidize landlords instead, to offer a social state subsidy, which was always very, actually quite small scale, maybe 5,000 to 10,000 people in Ireland. Now it's rocketed to 70,000 people are in private rental subsidized by the state. The budget for that is now 700 million, and the budget for building is zero.
Zero.
Yeah.
Well, we call that program in the United States Section 8.
Yep.
So, but is it available to everyone who might qualify? Is it an entitlement, or do you have to be on a waiting list to get Section 8, just like you have to be on a waiting list to get social housing?
No, you go on the housing waiting list, but if a landlord accepts the equivalent to Section 8, you can immediately get the payment. The problem is it's consensual for the landlord. Landlord can't be forced to take it, so there's widespread discrimination by landlords who are refusing the housing assistance payment.
Which is very much like the United States, because sometimes people have a year with a Section 8 voucher once they get one, and if they can't find a landlord that will accept that price, they lose the voucher.
Yep.
So that's the same thing in Ireland.
Yep. Or the landlords are asking for cash on top. They're taking the money from the state and then saying, well, actually, you're going to have to give me an extra €200 cash as well, because it's that type of, there's such a squeeze in the rental market that there's this constant escalating of prices.
Now, are the landlords required by the state to meet certain conditions of habitation? I mean,
nope.
They're not inspected.
There is legislation, but no reinforcement. There's no basis for the reinforcement of that legislation. So there's meant to be minimum standards in all rental accommodation and state accommodation, but again, there's no process for who penalizes a landlord or does anything about it.
So, okay, yeah. Well, you know, I keep thinking that Ireland will be better than the United States, but in some cases that's the same, you know, that's the same pot we're all stewing in here.
Yeah.
So if there's no new construction and you have a new system in Section 8, what is a family doing that's homeless, if they, or just regular people like yourselves who are in school or young families or whatever, how do they find a way? Are they living with their families? Or
yeah, widespread overcrowding.
Okay.
It's in some ways, it's one of the greatest strengths and weaknesses of us all, that people look after each other. So everyone moves in, but you end up with extended family all living together in overcrowded situations. Or you end up with families in emergency accommodation. There's a long history of institutionalization around as well, in terms of poverty and all that. And that seems to be part of what's coming back with home emergency accommodation. Long stays in semi-institutional environments where charities are running properties, where you're sharing all your kitchen facilities and have your own room. but you could have one room for the whole family, and there's a lot of monitoring of those families, and it can be, you could be there for 2-3 years to go into private rental and then go back out of it. So we've had people who are three times in and out of emergency accommodation in the last 5 years, which is a complete disaster, completely destabilising for children's lives, completely destabilising for families to be able to settle. And
I mean, it's only better than being on the street, right?
Yeah.
And that's a marginal question, yep, as well. So do tenants in law in Ireland have any basic rights? I mean, is there a security of tenure or leases? Or?
Yep, there's a, there's a probation period for 6 months where you could be evicted with no notice. And then after 6 months, every private rental tenant is on a Part 4, which means 4-year tenancy. But there are a number of loopholes to that. So if the landlord wants to sell, if the landlord wants his family to move back in, or the landlord wants to do substantial refurbishments, are all the basis for evictions. We're finding renovations is a big basis for evictions. They get a contractor to sign off, they need to do something major to the pipework, and then they just add a lick of paint and double the rent. So because we brought in rent pressure zones 3 years ago, so landlords can't raise the rent by more than 4% per year. But because of the loopholes, rents have gone up 15% a year. So
and are these zones geographical zones?
Yeah, or Dublin,
whole cities?
Cork.
Oh, okay.
Galway,
you know,
but not Limerick.
Similar in Scotland, but we've been trying to get both Glasgow and Edinburgh classified as what you're calling rent pressure zones.
Yep.
And there we've had more trouble getting the Parliament to agree that that's the interpretation of the law that we thought they'd pass. But
yeah, we've rent pressure zones, because there's so much landlords have a willingness to go take very illegal actions very quickly,
sure,
threaten people, just throw them out, do the fake evictions. We get some wins, and I've gotten money back for tenants when they've gone to court or stopped the landlord, but on a wide enough scale it's not working. The rent pressure zones aren't working. Like, we're demanding rent reductions, and then we want rent tied to income. So we've gone fairly radical on it, or slightly outside the norm of expectation. We don't think it's enough to just put a cap, because
right,
the rent's already way too high.
So, well, I mean, there's a big, as we're talking, there was a, perhaps the first state in the United States, Oregon, is now preparing to pass the first state in the U.S. that would have rent control. But this will not sound like rent control to you. The rent means that you can, it's only for units over 5 units. And it's 7% a year is what's the allowable increase on top of cost of living. So, you know, you're
that's
saying
terrible. To us, that's terrible.
I read this today in the New York Times before, you know, just trying to keep up with the headlines before we went. And I'm saying, is that's rent control here? Because, I mean, essentially, rents had gone up in Portland and other places in Oregon by 30, 35, 40% in the last 2 or 3 years. So,
yeah.
But you're putting in a system where you could have over the next 3 years, it could still go up 30%.
Yeah.
And I don't know where they think people are going to move. But, you know, the landlord and real estate lobby is extremely powerful in the United States and Canada. Is that also the case here? Or are these mainly just moms and pops? Or?
Ireland has a big financial services sector because of very lenient tax laws. So we're increasingly having
You refer to Ireland as the Cayman Islands.
It's
of
a tax
Europe.
Haven. Yeah. Originally, the Irish Financial Services Centre was a small area of the Docklands in Dublin, which was a tax haven, and now it's pretty much extended generally. So Apple have set up their headquarters here. They're being sued by the EU for $13 billion of unpaid taxes, which is all because of registering in Ireland and paying zero.
Right.
But we're increasingly having REITs, real estate investment trusts come in to do the large scale private buy to let. So that's expanding. So we're seeing a professionalisation of the private rental sector, which government's plan is to do that. So,
sure.
So we're seeing that lobby grow, and there's been a traditional landlord, maybe 5 to 10 unit landlord lobby, very connected with politics, a lot of kind of corruption around it, who like owning property has been a big part of Irish, I suppose, development, land and property, because there isn't as much industrial output or larger industrial sector. So it's mattered for a lot of powerful people in Ireland.
We're talking to Seamus Farrell, who's a housing activist and a central part of the Dublin Central Housing Group. And Seamus, one of the things that was exciting I heard about, and we've had this fight in New Orleans and Atlanta and several other cities, including, you know, in Peru, fighting against privatization of water. And
yeah.
That was every story I've heard about this is encouraging. So Veolia, who's a French conglomerate, who, in fact, our union has a contract with them on RTA workers, the transportation workers in New Orleans right now. They tried to take over the water system in Dublin or in Ireland generally. What's the story here?
Yeah, there was a proposal in 2014 for a public-private partnership, effectively, between Veolia and a semi-state Irish company.
They call it Veolia, so
Veolia.
Who knows? Between American and Irish and English,
yeah.
You know, it's a French word, so let's just say whatever.
So a semi-state company called Irish Water was set up. Originally, water would have been ran by the councils, the county councils, so directly by the state, no charge, maintained by public sector employees. So there's kind of a semi-privatisation effort and efforts to bring in charges. So individual metering of homes and charges depending on use per year.
This is going to seem unusual to a U.S. audience, but homes don't have individual meters now?
They do not, no.
Private residents or just multi-unit apartments?
Private residents. No one has it.
So the state provides the water?
State provides the water.
Love that system.
Good. It comes out of general taxation. It's fairer. It's based on your ability to pay.
Okay, so...
one of the good things.
That one of the good things about Ireland. So we lost that battle before we even got to fight it. But it sounds exciting. At one point, I think you told me there were like 100,000 people that came and rallied. Maybe I misunderstood.
There were three mobilizations in Dublin, which had over 100,000 people at them. The first one in October, actually, 2014, there had been a summer of effectively individual blockades by communities when they attempted to bring in water meters. People would stand at the corner of the state.
This was the government or Veolia?
The Irish Water.
Irish Water, which is,
so indirectly
doing business as
plus contractors
Irish
that right. They would, other contractors would be asked to help with the fitting and maintenance
it.
And then that would be backed up by the police. So there was running confrontations estate by estate where people were blockading entrances to complexes. Maybe there were 200 or 300 houses in it and two entrances they were blockaded, or individual fights house by house over it. This was a rolling kind of war of attrition where meters might go in after a month and then they were retaken out illegally by night.
And did the activists have a whole crew of meter removers?
Yeah, they were called water meter fairies, actually.
Oh.
People were dressing up with fairy costumes at night to the black their identity and putting them on social meters.
Yeah, a big wrench.
And throwing them out. So this was rumbling on the ground over a period of months. And then a number of trade unions called for a big demonstration in Dublin. And it was kind of this biggest thing that happened since the implementation of austerity in 2009. Which is very exciting. It was kind of a delayed reaction to like widespread cuts, like 20% cuts in public sector pay, like 25% unemployment from 2%, like huge jump in debt, like half of all state programs are effectively cut, like community sector programs, support programs. So this was kind of this big outpouring of all these grievances that had kind of bottled away, and this was the outlet to fight it. So that battle ran on for 2 years and a draw, effectively, no charges were implemented. There was also a massive boycott of bills. So people were then, because they couldn't meet it, they just sent around bills to individual houses. Those bills were burnt and not paid. In fact, there were public burnings of bills in the local greens.
And, well, did anybody pay?
30% paid, 70% boycott, and then the government agreed to scrap the charges and refund the 30%. For their first bill, so.
But Veolia also tried to swear that they needed 40. And did I overhear this? 40% or 45% in order to stay in, and then obviously people continued to boycott, or.
Yeah, something like that was a figure that was.
Yeah, I think I heard you say.
Around.
What an amazing campaign that must have really given.
Mobilization, boycott, and direct action on the communities kind of seemed to.
But that must have inspired a lot of organizing, including in the housing sector.
It did. It spilled over. So we had like communities against water charges, about 25 local community groups in the north side of Dublin.
And what happened to all those groups?
Some of them dissolved, some of them flowed into electoral politics, others moved into other areas like housing. There's been a big repeal around abortion rights in Ireland. There have been other campaigns.
Which has also been a great mobilization. We've talked to people in Galway who've been on the doors. They had a lot of confidence in going after housing now that they've spent so much time on the doors doing persuasive door knocking on the abortion campaign.
Yep.
So because I think Ireland was like the last, one of the last of the EU countries to give women the right of choice.
Hangover of Catholic institutional right in Ireland. We had some of the strictest abortion laws in the world.
Forcing all those women into England.
Yep. Everyone went to England. That was the... So an exporting of the problem rather than dealing with it and legalising and offering support for women. So that's a major win after a big win in water. So there have been major victories in the last number of years.
So you mentioned political parties. Is any political party starting to try to seize this housing issue with a program that would make a difference?
Yeah, no, there are now. There's a National Housing Homeless Coalition made up of... a number of political parties, mostly socialist parties, People for Profit, Sinn Féin, who would be traditionally Republican, Irish Party, and a number of other smaller groups and independents. So there is a decent level of...
And what are they proposing, or what are people demanding as they propose?
Rent caps or reductions, depending on the party. 10,000 public houses a year for the next 10 years. Ban on economic evictions.
So good stuff.
Yeah, good.
What are the odds?
It's not going too well. We've majority in local council, for example, for these demands, but a very centralised state where decisions are made at the Department of Finance level, the central government. So there's a local election in May, European election, but at the moment there's no general election to potentially move them out, and there doesn't seem to be a majority for those parties in a general election. So no, it's not looking too great in terms of legislation.
What are they projecting in terms of rent increases? Can it continue to rise at the level it is now?
It's hard to know. It seems so. And in some ways, the massive expansion of subsidies from the state creates a floor that's the lowest the rent can be, with everything paid after that. So it just seems to keep going up.
We ran into a group of students who were fighting rent increases. They were in... Limerick, and all the housing had been subcontracted out to private management. It wasn't owned by the university, so it was usually just €5 a year. An increase all of a sudden was 50 or more, so 15-20% increases. And you know, is it student housing? We passed a big complex on the way here. Is that an issue?
Yeah, it's currently exempt from all the tenancy protections. So there are license agreements with no
law
tenancy
of the wild.
Yep. And there's there's development exemptions in terms of, and tax breaks for development of student accommodation, so no tenancy rights and absolute cash windfall for the development of them. So
private companies are glad now for student housing.
Yeah, a load of private student accommodation companies have rolled into.
But you were saying they were being given free land and incentives on this IT college right down the road here.
Yeah, and effectively exemptions on tax for the next 10 years and a guaranteed income from students being there. It's a total win-win
These
for them, a loss for us.
To be a company in Ireland. No, you don't get paid, plus you might get incentives from the government.
And lower building standards for them, so they're going to be a complete disaster. They're going to become slums within 5 years. They're going to be really, really bad. So
we'll be doing eviction defense on whole, floors of students.
Yeah.
Seamus, if people want to know more information about Ireland and the housing crisis and the organizing here, or want to support Dublin Central Housing Group and the work you guys are doing, is there a website? How would they get a hold of you and others to lend a hand or to find out more about these issues?
You can check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Dublin Central Housing Action, the Irish
Housing. Dublin Central Housing Action.
That's it. And then the Irish Housing Network as well, which is the bigger picture of all the different groups that are working in Ireland.
And do they have a website, or is it just Facebook?
Again, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And both can be emailed as well. DublinCentralHousingAction@gmail.com if there's a one for that.
And do they have a way to take contributions? PayPal or...
Unfortunately not at the moment. Unless you're in Ireland and want to run a fundraiser for us. We don't have that set up because we're not a registered organization. So
you have to be registered to take a PayPal.
You do in Ireland, yeah.
Wow.
Very strict rules on that. I wonder why they brought that in.
Well, I mean, they can always go old school and just mail a dollar or a euro in an envelope to somebody over here.
That's no problem.
Yeah, that's no problem. You heard the Ireland Housing Network or Dublin Central Housing Action, and yep. You can find them on all these sources. And Seamus Farrell, I'm looking for your cards and letters. This has been Wade's World for another week, the world where the other half lives, where we talk about things you've never heard, and as Lucinda Williams sang, things you've never seen and will never forget. As the song goes, we say it loud, we say it on the air, we say it on the radio. Until next week when we have another guest, this is Wade Rathke for Wade's World. Thank you.